So maybe you can make a little semicircle, you know, come in just, you know what I mean? So that we're not all facing.
Just maybe just forward a little bit so that we can...
That we can have like a horseshoe. And you can still see the screen and I can see you and everybody can see each other and we'll have it. Because we want to be a little bit more interactive today. Yesterday we saw a presentation talking about what was going on with this program in Los Angeles and Detroit. So, and we can do a very quick review. Always we begin, all the Atma Yoga classes begin the same way in order to put people on the platform right away of Shravanam and Kirtanam and also to create auspiciousness. And so we'll begin the same way we begin all the any Atma Yoga class for anywhere. And Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And when we're working with people, and the purpose of this mission is preaching, bridge work, and reaching out to non-devotees, and placing the world of Krishna consciousness into language and ideas that are meaningful to everyday people, people who are either afraid of organized religion or afraid of, you know, cults, but they very much want spiritual experiences, so they're reaching out in so many ways. So we need to understand where they're coming from, what language they use. I don't mean like mother tongue. I mean what words they use that are safe and meaningful to them, both safe and meaningful. So, for example, when we start a class, we explain that these are Vedic sound vibrations that invoke auspiciousness and safety, that we are creating a circle of protection with this sound vibration, and we are creating a space that is ours. This becomes our sacred space now. And within this space, we're each of us free to pursue our own spiritual journey, our journey of self-discovery. And this language is very important to people because they know that this is, you know, something that, oh, I'm looking for a spiritual experience and here it's being described to me. I can relax. Nobody's trying to trick me. We talked about this yesterday. The emphasis to this type of outreach program, the way it's working for us, is that it's based on promotion. It's based on attraction rather than promotion. And in English, these are, we have to talk about these words for 1 minute because in English it's somewhat subtle, and if you're using English as a second language, maybe you're not going to appreciate the difference. But promotion in English means to promote. It's a very interesting word. We look at it very quickly. Promote means to sell. One way to talk about the word is to sell. One of the things I like to do when I study English, and even though it's my main language, I still study it a lot, is I always look for the Latin root. And when you look at the Latin root of a word, you find out a lot more about the word. And for those of you who know other languages, like Spanish or French, or even Dutch and Germanic languages, you'll recognize Latin roots sometimes behind the words, so it'll improve your understanding of the language. So the word promote, it had all those definitions, but you see I actually skipped all those definitions. To sell, to make popular, etc., to establish. But let's look at what the word means here. Pro plus movere, from the Latin movire, meaning to move, right? So this is the idea behind the word promote. It means you physically move, right? It means you push. It's mechanical. You're going to, you know, you're going to pull somebody, physically move them. You need to do this. When we promote something in America, it's very vigorous. You know, do this, buy this. If you don't buy this, you're the wrong place at the wrong time. You're not a good person. You know, that's the behind promote. Now, so promotion, similar thing. So I said this bridge work, this program, the way we're doing it, is based not on promotion, but rather on attraction, right? To attract. And that word we know so very well, right? What is Krishna, right? All attractive, right? So that's a word we know and we like. And that's really the essence of this. But in English, again, we can take another look at that word. I did a small paper. I haven't turned it in to Hridayananda Goswami on the origins of the word attract. I believe there's a connection to it in English through the ancient English roots to the word charisma. Krishna and charisma is a similar thing. But attract comes from the Latin for ad, which means a command. And trahere means pull. So this is very different from the other one, which means move. Now, maybe it's subtle here, but here in the definitions you see to arouse or compel the interest, admiration, or attention, to cause, to draw near, right? Magnetic poles are attracted. In other words, you can't help but be drawn towards something. In other words, the use of the word trahir here is not that you're pulling them, but that the object is irresistibly being pulled towards that source, right? So that's a whole very different from move, to have a process or an event or an activity or a space that pulls people in, that is irresistible to him, right? And this is the essence of Krishna. So in this programming, in this bridge program, use of yoga to preach and promote Srila Prabhupada's mission, we're focused on attraction, which means we don't have to make everybody that comes in the door a devotee. You know, that's not the goal. We will let them, and we allow the super soul to take responsibility for who's going to be a devotee and who's not. We're simply going to give them a positive experience that connects them to Vedic sound vibrations that are Vishnu Tattva, right? So we're going to draw a line. We're going to use many mantras, but all of them will be above the line of Vishnu Tattva, right? So we won't use mantras that are for demigods. We won't chant Om Namah Shivaya. We won't chant Ganapati mantras, etc. Right? So we're going to. So people will have an experience of these mantras, and this was yesterday. You can see that's the anatomy of what goes on in a class. Everybody else had that. So I'll give you one too, James. I know you didn't want to hear. So the whole premise of this is, and I'll be interested, like I said, I'm going to speak for a few minutes here to review, but then I want to also hear from each of you the kind of experiences you're having with people and drawing people into your programs, your temples, your centers, your preaching centers. But the idea behind attraction rather than promotion is that sometimes I'm not pushing Krishna bhakti yoga directly. I am bringing him in and I'm giving him a nice spiritual experience where they're actually practicing bhakti yoga because they're chanting, because they're taking prasadam, because they're hearing harikatha. So they're practicing it, but I'm not telling them that this is what you have to do. I'm just creating a safe space that looks like any yoga center. You saw the photographs yesterday, right? And then they're having association. The idea behind attraction is that we're creating association with all the things that will wake up that love for Krishna in their soul, right? Because it's already there, it's inherent. But we want to attract professional people. We want to attract intelligent people. We want to attract more than just people who are having psychological problems, who sometimes very interested in religious experiences because it's very black and white. And we have to be, sometimes we, you know, we want to be compassionate to everybody, but we don't just want that. We want diverse communities. In America, I don't know if you're having this issue here and congregationally, but in America, the congregations are all Indian-bodied, right? And Indian-bodied congregations are wonderful. It's important. But it's also nice to have non-Indian congregations in the Western countries, and that's not happening very well. You know, how are you going to build, and this is my question to you, and it's a question that I'm trying to address through this program, how are you going to build non-Indian congregations? Right? Indians, you can use the Sunday feast, the temple, and all that, because it's part of their culture. They're automatically attracted to it. They're not afraid of it. Right? But the Western marketplace that is interested in a spiritual experience has a large percentage that is afraid of organized religion, that is afraid of cults, that is afraid of sects. Now, we're not organized religion, we're not a sect, we're not a cult, right? But to help them, how do you make them understand that? What kind of program are they going to come to where they're going to be involved, more than just eat at the restaurant or go on a tour? What are they going to do that's going to involve them with your center, your preaching house, your temple? Right? So that's the question we're trying to address here. How are we going to build communities? And one of the things that I noticed early on is that in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a beautiful blueprint for building communities. You know, Krishna gives a very nice, you know, blueprint. He explains very clearly what the devotee community is meant to be. And he says that the topmost level, you're just going to think about Krishna. Those, you know, anybody who can just think about me 24 hours a day, you're done. You don't even have to do the regulative practice, you're done. You know what I mean? Perfect. That's it. If you can't do that, and everybody's familiar with these verses, right? If you can't do that, then some of us are more familiar than others. So thank you very much. That's exactly right. So, you know, follow the regulative principles of bhakti. If you can't do that, you know, work for me. If you can't do that, be self-situated, you know, and give in charity. If you can't do that, you know, do prayer and meditation. Well, as I was looking at that, I thought, you know, if you turn that upside down, that could be a blueprint for a spiritual community. We have people who are only just coming in for cultural knowledge, doing meditation, developing, having an experience that's giving them some cultural knowledge. That means to me that they're learning that they're not their bodies. These are the kind of things that you can actually address in a yoga class, the lowest level, you know. And then getting them involved in community projects, getting them involved in charity projects, things like that. That's another way of getting people. And because Krishna is saying that, not everybody's going to fit at every level, but here's a place for almost everybody who has a spiritual interest to get involved. So we said, well, this is a blueprint for the yoga programs as well, you know, because yoga is more than just a yoga class. And for example, at the Detroit mansion, which has many parallels to this center in the sense that it's extraordinary. Have you been to Detroit? No? Anybody? Detroit. You have to imagine your beautiful castle, which is so lovely and so, you know, nice. If somebody had come in and spent an extra, you know, 1 million euros in making it even that much more opulent, then you would have the Detroit mansion. The floors have gold in them. You know, there's marble and expensive onyx on almost every square inch. I mean, you can't imagine, you know. They're very similar buildings, except that it was made by a rich person in America in the early part of this century. So, yeah. Well, he helped buy it, but it was made by one of the auto industry people. So it's this very opulent. The Fisher Mansion, yeah, Fisher from the Ford Motor Company Associates. Anyway, the point is, they're not doing nearly as well as you are doing here. You know, they had a heyday when they also had many tourists come in, and they had the beautiful museum, and they had a restaurant, and they had the store. They had all these things, and they had thousands of people coming, you know, like you have now. But over time, that has diminished. Now there's almost no tours, practically speaking, none. You know, a few small tours, schools coming in. The restaurant is closed, except for special occasions when they open it up if they have an event. The store is closed. Museum is shuttered, or as we say in English, shuttered means the windows are darkened and nothing's going on. So it's very sad. You know, this very extraordinarily beautiful place, and nothing's going on. So now they're starting over, and one of the ways they're trying to address this problem is with the notion of what we in English call a wellness center. Do you understand this expression? A wellness center? Wellness means health.
Fit center.
Huh?
Fit center.
Yeah, fit center. A center for health and well-being, right? Because right now, in the Western world, this has become a very popular model. It's a very big thing to develop wellness centers. It's a center where people go to become well. And it has, and normally these address, for the most part, they're very physical. You know, they go for massage, they go for therapy, bath therapy, waters, you know, they go to the waters here in Europe. But also then they have Ayurveda now is very big, so they're having Ayurveda. And of course now, because yoga is so big, they're having yoga and so many other things like that. And so at the Fisher Mansion right now, they're working on creating a wellness center within the temple, because that would be a powerful way to attract people to come and be a part of the center again, and then take prasadam and hear sound vibration. And it's a very complete idea if we stop and think about it for a minute. When you're not feeling well, your body's not, or you want to develop better health, if you go somewhere, whoever gives you that health is going to mean a lot to you, right? You're going to develop, you really appreciate the people who heal you, right? So just like in India, when the Vaishnavs were running the hospital, you know, that's a very powerful idea. You know, this is why Vaishnavs should run everything that has anything to do with healing, right? Because then not only are they getting their body fixed, which we know is just a temporary thing, but they're developing association and a relationship with Vaishnavs. So the same thing coming to a healing center at a temple, right? They will take prasadam, they'll hear sound vibration. Maybe they're there first to work on their body, but they're having all this association and that's waking it up. And the same thing with yoga. We understand, we talked yesterday about 18 million people in America are doing yoga now. Right, so it's exploding all over the Western world. Huge numbers. And we understand that they're coming to yoga first as a sensual, sense-gratifying experience. Right? They're not. It's not a tiny percentage right now are coming because they have a spiritual quest. But most are coming for physical thing. But it's not just an exercise class they're coming to. Yoga, even though that's how yoga is done. But yoga, even though most people are doing it as an exercise class yesterday, just by virtue of the name, just the word, because the word is a Sanskrit, is a mantra, the word is a Sanskrit vibration. So just by nature of associating with the word, the soul is hearing and feeling this concept of union. Just the word yoga, you know? And so they're coming, I'm going to yoga class, right? And that's already operating on them at a very deep level. Because that, we know this now. We know this by the science of sound vibration. That any mantra that you hear is going to be heard by the soul, right? That's the power of Sanskrit. The soul recognizes it right away. So just the fact that they're coming to yoga is like we talked about yesterday, the thread in the sweater, right? You could pull on that thread and you can unravel their whole reality. Now, none of the yoga systems that are extant or that are being practiced right now in America have that capacity, because their philosophy is completely contaminated or non-existent almost, right? Either they've stripped all philosophy from it, or they're sharing, you know, Mayavadi philosophy. And so there's a need to extend and represent this new yoga that is somehow connected to Vaishnavism. And so that's, and as we saw yesterday, we went through the presentation, the anatomy of a class, and you saw the many different ways and the different programs. And it begins with just a yoga center, but then you can also have wellness center, then you have seminars, Ayurvedic seminars, astrology seminars, the pranic healing, the yoga psychology. People are very interested right now in what we call self-help. Do you know what this means, self-help? This is a typical American English expression. Self-help is the entire movement or industry of people, wherein people are looking to improve themselves. Right? They want to be better people. They want to be better at their job. They want to be happier. They want to control their minds. They want, you know. So there's a whole industry, and you have those books here. People buy these books, right? That how to be happy, how to influence friends, how to control, you know, people, how to, so many things, right? So all this is self-help. And we are the origins of all self-help psychology. All psychology of the mind at every level is inside of our texts and our work. If you take it out and break it apart, you can provide almost, you can solve almost any solution with information that's in here if you're willing to dig it out. This is something I'm not seeing enough of yet in our movement, but more and more people are starting to develop programs to help people that are based on our science. And when you do that, you automatically connect them to the philosophy, to the stream of consciousness that flows through it. Okay, so let's summarize. How are we going to build? And now let's open it up a little. And let me hear, please, you know, what issues you're facing or what comments you have on this. This things like we talked about, how are we going to build communities, congregations? How can we create a safe place for people to come and not just come once but become a participant? We talked about, for example, when people are being healed, either in a yoga class or in a wellness center, they develop a powerful relationship with the healer, you know, and then they look to you for guidance. Then they come to you. Well, what do I... This is the experience I'm having with so many yoga students are coming to me with their problems, their family problems, their how, you know, they want solutions. And all the solutions I have to give them are going to slowly lead them on the path of devotion because that's the only thing I know to give them, you know. But you have to break it up. So people will come to you if you're healing them and helping them. And they'll come to trust you. And that's a very important... Didn't she talk about trust in her lecture? Mother Irmala, you know, as one of the ways in which people... Yeah. So this is a very powerful way to build trust, is by healing people. You know, so we become educators and healers through our science. And what we're doing here, you know, all we've done in this, with the Atma Yoga class that you saw yesterday, all we've done is added in some hatha postures and breathing. It's still basically our philosophy. You know, just it's made in a way that's very simple and safe for them to eat, right? So, yeah, that's a pretty good summary, isn't it, of what we've said? Tell me, who has any comments or? Light on yoga.
And then I read it, was showing the author was explaining, you know, some of the pastimes of Krishna. And then in the end, he had some quotes from Bhagavad Gita. And then, you know, I started practicing that yoga. But then at one point, some friend pointed out, he said, you know this person there? He's a devotee of Hare Krishna. You know? And then I immediately thought, I have to go and talk to him. You know, but because I was reading this Hatha Yoga book with all the stories of Krishna, it wasn't religion, because I was very much against religion, or when you say to me religion, I don't want to have anything to do with it. But through that Hatha Yoga book, I was, as soon as somebody pointed out a Krishna devotee to me, then immediately I wanted to speak to him, because I got interested through the Hatha Yoga book. I mean, that's my personal experience.
Thank you. Well, it's a good thing you didn't read the book too closely, because he actually, yeah, it's very impersonalist, and it very much promotes an impersonalist. But I've heard many stories like this, you know, how people came even back then in the 70s, you know, Amala Bhakta Prabhu, Dravida Prabhu, all in their stories are came to through Hatha. Who else?
Is it okay to ask a question, Prabhu? This may not be so related. Just what does it mean when you say that we're not a cult, a sect, or a religion? What are we?
Okay, that's a good. What does that mean, we're not a cult, sect, or religion? Would you like to answer that? No, you don't want to answer it.
Well, with these names like sect, cult, goes a negative understanding of people who, you know, basically are brainwashed and who are fanatics. So people, obviously, because in the press this concept has been emphasized, and people have drunk this for many years, especially in France, but also all over the world a little bit. People have, you know, a negative understanding of that, this word. So when they come, that's my understanding, when they come in contact with such something which is a little bit different from what they expect, then there is some fear in their mind. Is this not one of these sects or cults where I've read so many articles about? So that's where the fear comes in, and that's why you are explaining that, you know, this Atma Yoga is a nice way to, and it has to be presented in a way that people can drink it, and then gradually they overcome, once they have some realizations and good feelings about this practice, then they can handle, you know, a little more confrontation, and then they can overcome it by themselves intellectually and like that.
Thank you, Prabhu. Yeah, that was, I couldn't say it better. There's an interesting there's an interesting challenge that we're facing. Here in Europe, you face a somewhat different challenge than we do in the United States. Here in Europe, organizations, in order to be recognized, because your society has a lot of very rigid structures, in order to really survive, you almost have to be recognized as a religion in Europe, you know, and you're trying to be recognized as a religion. On the other hand, in America, it's just exactly the opposite. We don't need to be a religion. We don't need to be recognized. Anybody can do anything they want there. You just have to be. Everything is evaluated in what's called the market of public opinion. It's really just a matter of the image that you give people, and if that image is something that they want or don't want. There's no like legal requirement that we are, you know, be certified, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the interesting thing is that who are we trying? This is all about preaching. This is all about promoting Prabhupada's mission, right? This is what we're talking about today. So who is it that we're trying to reach? And the word in English we would use is market, right? What's our market? That means what's our audience, right? Who's going to be attracted to what we have? And who do we want to attract? Right? So we are to consider these things. Now, right now, there's a group of devotees in the United States called the SSSTP, and it's made up of temple presidents, something, I don't know what it is, strategic planning committee. And it's run by Gopal Bhatta, and it's made up of temple presidents and GBCs, people like Anuttama and Swavas and Rabindra Swarup and, you know, so many of the leaders from North America, right? Because they're very curious about how to make things move along better in America. Well, when they first got together to have these meetings, they had me do research for them on what's going on in America, in what we actually call and use the expression the spiritual marketplace. In other words, what is the landscape look like of people who are looking for spiritual experiences, right? And I read many books, and I did a tremendous amount of research on the internet, and what I published when I was done was like, it filled like this much photocopy room. You know, it was like several reports. But some very interesting things came up out of this. And one of the things we learned is that there is a large percentage of the population, maybe, and one statistic was as high as 25% of the adult population in the United States is interested in, are what we would call spiritual seekers. They're looking for a spiritual experience. They want something more. They're not satisfied. They're looking for this. This group was also characterized by either apprehension, in other words, not very certain, or absolutely opposed to organized religion, right? So that's not their answer. Very similar overlap. And we saw this in other ways. America, the United States, is very interesting. It's the most of the Western countries, it has the highest percentage of people who believe in God. Like 95% of Americans believe in God. No other Western country has that. You have to go to a Muslim country. Yeah, not in Benelux, not in Spain, not in France, not England. It's a much lower percentage. So see, really, a lot of people believe in God. But only somewhere between, depending on how you classify it, 45-60% of those people that believe in God are churched. We call it churched. That means that they're part of an organized religion. So there's all these, this huge portion of Americans who believe in God but don't want anything to do with religion. And so from that point of view, from the point of view of bridge work, we actually go out of our way to clarify what is Krishna consciousness. And that's why it's not, in my opinion, based on Prabhupada's words, not a sect or a cult. His best explanation of this is in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. In the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, he explains, which is very high order in our hierarchy of accepted, you know, writings. You know, that's a very highly placed segment. And in there he explains very much that this is not religion, that Sanatana Dharma is the inherent constitution of every being. And the very idea of organized religion is just something that you believe, right? You choose it, you can unchoose it, you can go on and off, right? So that's what we mean by sect, cult, etc. Something that, in the definition I'm using here, is something that you choose to believe, right? I could be born a Muslim, but I could become a Jew. You know, I could be a Jew and become a Christian. I can be born a Jew and say, I don't want to be a Jew, right? But Krishna consciousness is based on the reality that you're not this body, you're a spirit soul, and your constitutional position is servitor to God. I can't unchoose that or anything. It doesn't matter what I believe. That's who I am, right? So this is an important issue to this huge group of people who are looking for a spiritual experience but don't want organized religion, right? So this issue becomes fundamental to the way we build these programs. So let's go on with what problems you're facing or what issues you have in your communities or what are you trying to do. Tell me about, some of you were telling me yesterday about projects that you have that you think, isn't that you?
Maybe he can tell more.
So tell us about what you're working on.
At our place, we have every Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock, we have a group of people coming, and we try to invite newcomers. But the group of people is, they're more or less devotees already. I can just speak straight forward. It's like a program in the temple, you know. We have kirtan, bhajan, prasadam, a class from Bhagavad Gita, and then we do a little discussion or question and answer, and then at the end some prasadam. And we also have in another town we started a new group, and there I try to give it more in an introductory way. I also have a course which is based on the book Readings in Vedic Literatures from Swatsvarup Maharaj. He gave that as a guest teacher on at universities. And I made a simple course of it and explained the basics of the philosophy. But it doesn't talk much about now you completely surrender to Krishna and become a devotee. It's very indirectly, you know, like that. And I'm experimenting with that also. Especially do that with the introductory groups. And what else should I say? I don't know.
Are you finding ways for people to become, to integrate their lives, to become more involved, to feel like they're part of the community? Do they feel like they're part of the community?
Yeah, I don't know how to.
They give invitation out on the street or putting in the New Age centers or in the library or so. And some of them are sometimes, one of them is engaged for flowers, bringing flowers every week. And they cook sometimes if they have time for it. So they are doing more and more. So and coming to Rades for the weekends or doing service here in Rades whenever. Coming to Rades. Yeah. And doing service here or staying weekends or other things that is happening here.
Mm-hmm. And what would help you think to increase this? And what are the problems you're facing?
When we have new people, they just come one time to see what is going on, but we cannot really get them to stay. It's just for experience, and then.
Why do you think that is?
Maybe there's too much religion or so. I don't know, because it's more
because
in the Mahatta.
You're describing you're already very straightforward, so when they're coming in, it's not really bridge anymore.
Yeah, it's really Namahatta preaching, so.
Okay. Who else can tell me about?
Well, in Antwerp we have the same kind of situation, only it's not a Nam Hat, but it's like a temple with like a morning program and all week there's programs. But some time ago we opened Govinda restaurant to have a lower entrance for the people to easily come in. And we see that some people then also come on the Sunday feast and... So it's like an attempt to let the people come more. And we did also music classes. We have cooking classes, which attracts people. We did also a little bit yoga, but we didn't have the good place for it. And but we tried, because Devamrita Swami was also saying this loved preaching. But it needs really also the facility has to be there to do it, and that is not yet the case. But we are very much inspired by this, because I think that's the future.
So here in Radha District, we have the general visitors, which is are then guided for 1.5 hours in the tour program. That can be, you know, even if they don't know anything, then that program is very, very well fit for them. Some of them, they may fill in at the end of the tour a paper with some choices which they are interested in. So that's one level of preaching. Then the other level is that, because we build this guest house, and so there are more possibilities, and there we do two things. Either we organize ourselves certain courses, but we are still looking there for, you know, like we did a few cooking courses and it was great, and then suddenly we did a cooking course and there was practically nobody. So we are really still looking there for formulas. Then within that guest house and this room, etc., we have the other possibility of attracting yoga groups or Tai Chi group, or they don't mind. Of course, it's a setting of a Hare Krishna temple. They are well aware of that. So there is some bridge to step over. But at the same time, so far we have had good experiences, you know, people coming more close to Krishna consciousness, have a better understanding just by having here a weekend of yoga. So that's good. But what is, I feel, still missing is the fact that we can do an advertisement in a paper or something, and that people just come for a weekend, you know, like Atma Yoga, or, you know, some type of, that's still lacking there. It's as I said, because if you do, like, you announce Bhakti Yoga or Bhagavad Gita course, you know, then very soon, I mean, you can do it like once a year or something and you will get people. As soon as you want to do it every trimester, you know, the numbers go right down to a few who subscribe themselves, or we have to cancel the weekend, or, you know, so we have to find formulas that appeal to the general mass of people, and then still don't mind to come very close to a Hare Krishna setting. So that we are still looking there, basically. I mean, Rasa Parayana, like he is more meditating on that than Stoka Krishna Prabhu, but we still didn't find yet our success formula, so to speak. You know, it should be that you put an announcement in a good newspaper, and on the basis of that announcement, you know, you pay, I don't know, 150 euros for, you know, an announcement. And on the basis of that, 20, 30 people subscribe themselves, come here for a weekend. That would be ideal. But that's not, you know, that's not happening yet. Yeah, you have to have things which appeal to them and which they feel, you know, safe to, on the basis of a phone call and get some or internet, whatever, that they hook in there, you know. That's
there's two things that come to mind right away, because what he's saying is has a combination of, I mean, there's many things that are going on. When right off the bat, you're trying to essentially establish a business, right? Advertising, bringing people in, asking them to pay for the weekend. That puts you into the competition with all the other things that are going on for people to do on a weekend, right? They have so many options in modern days, and many different health and different opportunities. You know, they can go to this beach or this spa or this, you know. So there's, it's at one level, it's very much just a business and marketing. Right. They're successful because they have either a lot of time behind them, or they have a lot of capital behind them, and they're really doing heavy marketing. In the United States, it's market. You see the same thing. you know, and in trying to watch, in watching yoga centers and wellness centers now over the last 6 years that I've been working with them, watching which ones become very successful and which ones don't. Often one of the criteria is that they had the capital to advertise and, you know, promote long enough before, you know, while they grew, right? And they grew very slowly, but they maintained, you know, their awareness in the public. Now, at a national level or a city level, that can be very expensive. On a local level, it can also just mean putting out flyers and things like this. There's two examples I want to talk about. We did a yoga center, a commercial yoga center in Santa Monica, California. And that's a very big, that's one of the biggest cities in America for yoga. It's very popular there. And but we opened the center. It was a very beautiful center. It looked, you know, kind of like this room, very nice and big and a lot of light. And we started with nothing, two students the first week. And it took a lot of time and just consistent energy, but that was being in a city of advertising. We spent well over $100,000 in the first 2 years just to stay open and advertise. Then by the end of 3 years, we had maybe 350 people a week, you know, coming to the studio. And so it was just a matter. In that case, it had to do a lot with persistence and the marketing and everything like that. But then there's another good example of an organization that I learned a lot from because I studied them. I was friends with them. I studied with them for several years because I've studied many different yoga systems, and I've been in many yoga schools. And how many people have heard of 3HO? 3HO? Happy, healthy, and holy. And who is that? That is Yogi Bhajan. Do you remember Yogi Bhajan? Yogi Bhajan? Still barely. Yeah, he was from the Golden Temple. For those of you who don't know who Yogi Bhajan is, not everybody knows, right? Yogi Bhajan was a Punjabi Sikh, and he came to America around the same time of all the gurus, you know, same time Prabhupada came. So many gurus came in that time. You know, it was a very unusual period. And, immigration laws changed and things like that, and airplane travel was cheaper. But all of a sudden, I think it had a lot to do with, you know, changes in the whole spiritual, in the whole consciousness of the planet. But so many gurus come to America, and Yogi Bhajan is one of them. And he's teaching Kundalini Yoga. Kundalini Yoga is Hatha Yoga. When you read the Sanskrit scriptures on Hatha Yoga, they mostly are describing Kundalini Yoga. And Kundalini Yoga is just combining Kriya. Instead of asana, they're doing Kriya. Kriya means activity. Right? So instead of doing a back bend, you know, you're doing this. Right? It's like your movement. Right? So that's a kriya, and breathing and mudra and bond and mantra. So they're combining all this thing. So anyway, he comes to teach this yoga, and it's very popular for a while in the late 60s and 70s, and they had a explosion of lots of people joining, and then it got very slow and didn't grow very much, and then all of a sudden in the last 10 years it's growing again, and because yoga became big. Yeah, it was they do a lot like we do. I mean, it's a still impersonalist, and it's a lot of concocted stuff that he's spewing out. He met with Srila Prabhupada. There's a conversation between the two of them. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, he was trying to do the unity of everybody, but Prabhupada didn't. Yeah, it won't work, he says. But anyway, but the point is that when yoga got big, they had a resurgence, right? They got very big. Now, when you go to their event, when you go to their yoga class, it's just like a yoga class. They begin with the chant. They chant Om Namo Gurudev Namo. Is their opening chant, and they do the kriyas and the yoga and the breathing, and they use mantras, They use lots of different mantras. Some are Vishnu Tattva, but they're all over the place. And the teachers are all Sikhs, because he didn't come to make Sikhs. He came to teach this Kundalini Yoga. And then he got many students in the 60s, and they wanted to become more committed. So then he started letting them take Amrit, you know, the Sikh vow, right? And this is a religion, right? So these people were joining Sikh is a religion. It's a 500-year-old religion. It was, you know, it was started around the same time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on the planet. But it's just a, you know, it's a religion based on a combination mostly of mishmash of Hinduism, a little bit of Muslim theology, but mostly it's Hinduism and combination of impersonalism with, you know, some personalist notions thrown in. But the point of the story is that these people teaching yoga now, and these yoga centers have become very big, and they have so many professional people coming because they come to the class and they have a very strong experience. When they, much more than a hatha class where you come and you feel pretty good when you leave. When you take the kundalini class, it's more powerful and you feel it. You really feel different when you leave. You have, wow, I really had an experience, right? Because they're manipulating the subtle body more dramatically. And so, but people are coming by the thousands to take these classes all over the world, right? This yoga, as yoga became popular, they were always there. But then all of a sudden people started taking Kundalini yoga. And what's so interesting about it is that they're taking it from Sikhs, right? They're more strict about like clothing. Like we don't always go out in tilak and Vaishnava wear. But Sikhs, they take a vow. They have to wear a turban. They have to wear the beard. They have to wear, you know, the clothing. You know, they're always dressed that way. So, but people are coming. What amazed me is how many people were coming to take yoga from them and feeling there was no fear, right? There was no, you know, and they would do one of the most important things that you need to do in building your community once you have enough momentum is your retreats. You know, the annual retreats are very important, where people come for either 5 days or a week or 10 days to have an extended experience, because that's when they can recharge, take a break from their outside world, immerse themselves in yoga and sound vibration and prasadam and all that. So the retreats are very important. They do a retreat every year at summer solstice. So they just had it now. They have a site in New Mexico in the United States, and they do one here in Europe. They do it in France. I can't remember where. It's in August. Huh? The Sikhs did? They came here? Huh? Oh, with their youth. All right, not their whole thing. So, but the point is that, I haven't been to the one in Europe, but I've been to the one in the United States. And they get 1,500 people, 1,200 to 1,500 people come to this annual retreat. You know, they pay $300-$400 for the week, and it's camping. There's no facilities. You know, everybody's camping. And maybe 500 or 400 of those people, you know, much less than half, you know, are Sikhs, all in Sikh. And the rest are all professional people, young people that are just interested in the yoga experience. And they're mixing very nicely with the Sikhs, you know. And some of them, you know, who have it in their heart may become Sikhs. But most of them won't. But yet they're, you know, absorbing all their ideas, philosophy, technology, everything. I thought this is really fascinating that they can have so many, that these people are coming to them and they have no fear. And this is, these people are a sect. We're not even a real sect, you know. They're a real sect. You know, it's in their paperwork.
Can figure out what is threatening the people, then, you know, we can work on these things and we can make our programs accordingly, and it will make the difference. I'm very much aware. I never had it so clear like you expressed it, You know, people feel okay as long as they don't feel threatened. And in these tours, you know, I always had to deal with people, and our movement goes through so many changes and so on, you know, but and the main thing is that the people feel okay, you know. And it, once you have that, then things will work. You can invite people, you can do things, but that's the main thing to deal with, I find.
And that's what we talked about at the beginning, the difference. Thank you. That's very good. That's the difference between between attraction and promotion, right? And that's the foundation that I think we're looking at here in these bridge programs. That, you know, how do we create this mood? How do we really create this experience of attraction where it's just safe? They want to be here. Just like somehow the Sikhs had that. They weren't afraid. We've all met, I was a Christian, I grew up a Christian, but, you know, in and out. But I'm very uncomfortable. I can be very uncomfortable around Christians, especially if they're very strong, right? Do you know this feeling? They're never going to accept you unless you join, unless you say, okay, I accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. You know, He is the light and the way. It's like no matter how pious you are, no matter how much you can say you agree with them, no matter how much you believe in, we all love Jesus. We know He's a great, you know, He's the Son of God. It doesn't matter. They won't accept you, you know, and you know that. If you don't know it up here, you know it in here, you know. And that's what scares people. And so whatever experience we're creating here, and the more we create it, the more people that come to these wellness centers, to these yoga centers, to these community centers, and they have a safe experience, then they tell other people. And I think that's really one of the ways that this will grow. You know, it's just going to be that the experience will build on itself. Yes.
What would you say why the people are able to feel more comfortable with the Sikhs than with the Hare Krishnas? What would you say?
That's a good question. Does anybody have an answer besides before I say anything?
I was thinking it is the way of preaching, that we are preaching too much fanatic and not like, okay, everything is okay. But that Krishna consciousness is the only way. I think the way we are preaching is maybe.
Okay,
too.
That's a very good point.
I heard that many people say that the dress is a strong obstacle in. The dress that the vote is.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay, I think.
I also think the strong preaching is the cause.
The
Yeah.
Just a guess, might it be because the Sikhs, do they see their religion as kind of a family thing and their own culture, so they're not actually looking to have people become Sikhs? So it's not in the ether, whereas as Hare Krishnas, that's very much in our consciousness. So people feel comfy around Sikhs because they says, they're Sikhs, we're us, and this is kind of just because we're both doing this kind of yoga. So
I think that there is a difference in the way they look at themselves, but they are looking for add-ons. I mean, at their retreats, they do offer the opportunity for people to take Amra. I mean, they are adding people. So it is. They're not like Jewish people who aren't really adding. Jewish people don't proselytize, right? To my knowledge, they're not like trying to get people to become Jews. That's really a birth thing. But these people, they are offering the baptism.
Well, I don't know if good thing to say now. Well, I mean, you know, they offer something for the body, for health, and that's attractive for big groups of people, while what we offer is self-realization, which is only for a small group of people.
I think that's probably one of the rightest answers. I mean, it's not one thing, it's because it's what you say, because we have to become better communicators, right? You know, we're running out of time. I wanted to bring up a letter here from Sukadev, from Prabhupada. He wrote to Sukadev back in the late 60s, and I'll just paraphrase it real quickly, but he was very explicit when he said that we need, he told Sukadeva that we need, he was actually talking about college preaching, but the idea in the letter was very explicit that we need intelligent, scholarly, professional people because they're going to become your managers. And then Prabhupada goes through, actually I can bring it up real quickly. Prabhupada goes through and talks about how, so he says, so Sukadeva had written him a letter asking him for some instruction on what to do. And Prabhupada says, well, you know, if you want some special instruction, in that case, my request to you is that you enter into the universities and colleges wherever possible and preach there with the view to recruiting some first-class devotees for helping me manage and push on this movement all over the world. Overall, there's a shortage of first-class experienced men to manage things just to the highest standard, as you are doing. Therefore, I'm calling upon you, the big leaders, to push this idea forward, namely, to attract some educated people to join us. The idea is that they will only agree to join us if we ourselves conduct ourselves intelligently by the preaching approach. The secret will be to engage them as they like to be engaged. That is, supposing that I've got some education, I'm a business student, or I have some skill or talent, I'm a typist or musician or something like that. So you see, he's really broadening it beyond even just college students. So I would like to utilize these things for Krishna only if I am encouraged in a certain way, very tactfully. And I must not be discouraged by too much forcing me at first to accept everything of shaving the head, rising very early, going for street sankirtan, like that. No. Let me come gradually. Let me study also Krishna consciousness and see how it is practical and sublime. Gradually, I may get some taste for these other things and agree to do them voluntarily and intelligently. We are not dogma or like army camp, no. We are servants of Krishna. That means we understand that Krishna is our protector under all circumstances. So this is very good, right? This is very clear instruction about what you're saying. This, we're not meant to preach one way. We have so many ways that we're being told that we should communicate. So it, a lot has to do with what we communicate. So that's one half of it. To the answer to the question is the way we communicate. But to go, the other part of the answer is also what he said, that they're healing these people. And that's the number one thing I noticed about the Sikhs. They are putting themselves forward as healers. You know, so they're fixing people's bodies. Now, we maybe say, well, why should we waste time fixing their bodies? Why should we save a drowning man's coat? You know, this is because you save the coat and the man drowns anyway, right? But the reason is that when you do take the time to heal somebody, to reach out to them through a yoga class or through Ayurveda or through some method, seminar, workshop, or retreat, they, what we said earlier, it changes their relationship. And I think that's one of the answers to why the Sikhs have such a different experience with their students than we do. Because they have the benefit of developing a relationship at a simpler, grosser level. But in that process, they came to trust the Sikhs, right? They go, we're not trying to turn you into anything. We're just trying to make you wholer. We're trying to make you happier. And their motto is 3HO, happy, healthy, and holy. That's their motto, you know. So it's not that they're completely bereft of having a spiritual goal, you know. Nor should we be. Our idea is to teach people yoga at all in so many different ways, which means that you have to deal with the body, the mind, and the soul. And today we had such a wonderful class from Satchinandana Maharaj about that it's really about the mind. And if we get into the yoga, what we've been doing here, breaking down the yoga with the pranic purification, the breathing programs, it's kind of like rebirthing, but it's tied into Vaishnavism. Or we have the mantric tantric, which is the sound vibration. Or we have the yoga for married couples, right? Or we have the leadership workshop. Or we have the yoga class. There's so many ways now where we can start addressing people's needs for psychological needs. Right? And the information is in our stuff. That's all I'm doing is taking our philosophy and putting it into practical applications that these people are already looking for.
I remember Anuttama Prabhu, he mentions that when people have mental problems, they don't. Most people don't go to psychiatrists, they go to their priests in America. And he said, 75%. So he said it's actually our job to be a psychiatrist. I don't know if I remember 75%.
I don't know what the statistic is, but that something like that could be true. This program is, from a preaching point of view, very similar to what Shonaka Rishi and everybody and his company are trying to do for ISKCON. Because his point of view is that we have to become educators. We have to become Brahmins and become a resource for the people. And so what we're saying here is that we need to become a resource. You need to, marketing-wise and content-wise, both, develop yourselves, your programs, so that you can become Brahmins for the public, which means you can become their priests. But they don't want to go to Catholic priests, so they want to go to a spiritualist. That's why there's so many magazines now. You go crazy looking at all the different New Age, the nonsense that people are going to, you know. And the people who are very good at it, it's useful to read their books to understand how they use language to help to present themselves as healers. These people are Wayne Dyer. He's huge right now. Deepak Chopra. Yeah. But the other one is just as... And the other guy's even as bad or worse. And then Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, you know. But they're selling millions of books, you know, and they're filling retreats and seminars, and people are paying hundreds of dollars, right? But it's in his case, what's important in all of their cases, what you can do is learn about how they're presenting themselves, the language, what people, because they're saying something that's registering with people, and it's not the content. It's the package, right? Their content is very low grade, you know? Impersonalism is low grade spirituality. It's accepted even in Bhagavad Gita, you know? Even Prabhupada in the purport in the 12th chapter, he says, yeah, sometimes that's the only way for people to have some spiritual advancement, you know, is to think they're like God, right? But it's very low grade, and we recognize that. So what we're saying is put our content into these more powerful and effective delivery systems. And where the Atma Yoga is one simple beginning, but we can't do it all by ourselves. We have to work together. I want to know, and we can talk about this more on Friday, I want to know how we can help each other, how I can help all of you, we have to work as a team. One person has an interesting idea, then if we take it and share it amongst ourselves and look at how we can apply it and bridge. I didn't have time today, but I was going to go through some of the email. I mean, because I have letters from all over the world coming right now, regularly. You know, here's one, what's the possibility of to get Atma Yoga teacher training in Brazil? You know, and then I get one from Argentina, Bulgaria, Hungary, England, many different states in the United, inside of the North America, Mexico, you know. But we have to work together and figure out how we can do this. You know, how can we, what I'm focused on right now, just like, actually in a similar parallel to Shonaka Rishi and Hanuman and Rasa Mandala and their whole training program, their main focus is training teachers, right? So my main focus is the same, because I can't run around and do this. I'm only one person. It's impossible, right? So we have to find people who want to come, and we can work together and learn how to develop these programs. So on Friday, we can talk about, think about and talk about how we can help each other, how I can help, you know, you, what kind of things you would need from what we have, And I can show you on Friday a little bit more about, you know, some of the materials we've created, some of the software that we've developed to for example, for teaching the yoga, and maybe take a closer look at some of the seminars and workshops that we do, like the advanced leadership and the teacher training, you know, like specifically if you want, if that helps, or we can just talk about what it is, you know, we can do to help each other. If that sounds good. And then my idea for tomorrow was that people might like to experience an actual yoga class the way we do it for the public. So tomorrow we'll just, in this time slot, we'll start right at noon and we'll do an actual yoga class the way we do it from the beginning to the end. You know, and it'll be one of the three styles of the yoga. We actually have three styles of yoga. Obviously we can only do one. So we'll do an easy one. But the thing that's different about Atma Yoga, and I'll talk a little bit about it tomorrow during the class, is that I've incorporated esoteric combinations of yoga based on the Hatha scriptures for the practical component or the physical component that are always, always able to give people an experience. So in that sense, it's like, it's more like Kundalini than Hatha. But we have it in three different forms so that a wide range of people can appeal to them. We have what's called power yoga and slow, deep stretch yoga and Kundalini Shakti yoga. So, yes? For tomorrow, and maybe you can announce this tomorrow, anybody wants to come to the yoga class, because we have the mats or something. You don't have to have mats. You can just use towels. It's a little more comfortable with a mat, though. But yeah, you should wear yoga pants, pajama kurta, kurta pajama, as they say, right? Or Punjabi, yeah. And the men just yoga pants. You know, men can do yoga in dhotis. I actually often teach in a dhoti. You know. Yeah. That's one of the things I do, by the way, is when I teach, I wear tilak. I let them know who I am, you know. And on the website, people know that there's an affiliation with ISKCON. You know, and obviously if it's at a temple, they're going to know. But I don't want to hide that. I want this to be a part of people having a new experience of ISKCON. They go, these people, it's not just the airport. They have other things to offer, you know. I can turn to them for support, for counseling, for healing, you know. And I think that's a way to bridge. And we're not healing because we believe the body is so important to heal, but because that's a way to extend ourselves and develop a community. And we've seen now, as you saw, some people are just favorable, some people become contributors, some people become physically active and being part of the temple, and some of them have become devotees. So I've seen all the levels, you know, occur. You know, and a community has sprung up. Now there's a community in LA that wasn't there 2 years ago. Yeah, from the Atma Yoga. So there already is a community there. And now there's a community, a small one, growing and starting in Detroit. Detroit has difficulties because they have no resource right now. One of the reasons that everything went down is because the person that was giving them support annually stopped giving it to them. So they lost a big portion of their funding. So now they're struggling, and you can't imagine how hard it is to start with no capital. You know, it's almost impossible. Any last question? Otherwise, it's lunchtime. Is that okay? Is my plan okay? Do we like this, to do a class tomorrow and then a final, really in-depth discussion on how to move forward and how to help each other on Friday? Is that good? Hare Krishna.